720 WGN on the road with Dane live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Typically, we've been able to say a beautiful day on Michigan Avenue, people enjoying the weather. We can do that again today. I was a little worried, though, right? Because this morning it was kind of rainy. I thought I'd have to figure out some rain talk. You're like, hey, you know, maybe bring your galoshes, bring an umbrella or whatever. No, no need. Just get out there and enjoy the day. It's going to be great. The show, as we mentioned with Scott, is jam-packed. We're going to be a little bit, as so many people are doing throughout the summer, going to be a little bit travel heavy as we get ready for a Brickyard 400 weekend down at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We are going to talk about some of the road trips that you can take, some of the road trips that I took on leg one of our road trip. We went through the Illinois route from here in the Chicagoland area down to the Kissimmee area, and some of the guests are going to reflect some of that. In studio with us the entire time is the esteemed, the revered Dave Hammond from New City. He is the dining and drinking editor. Dave, welcome back to WGN.
Thanks, Dan. Glad to be here.
Oh, you know, as excited as I am that you are here, I know the listeners are going to love it as well, as you are not only you know, a food and drinking aficionado and a communicator on that level in so many different ways, but also a globe-trotting bon vivant. So you have traveled the world. You've seen what it has to offer, what it has to avoid. And we're going to talk about some of those things, some of the far-flung places that you've gone travel-wise.
Yeah, and if we have time, I'd like to tell you how I got a black eye from a snow cone in the Yucatan.
So that's when
we'll tease with
when
that.
Your food fights back. That's for sweeps week, like when snow cones attack, right? So everybody is getting out, and I'll be on leg two a little bit later this week as I fly back down to Kissimmee to pick up our son Maxwell and drive back through Indiana. I'll be hitting, I think it's Huber Winery, Distillery, and Brewery that also has an acclaimed kid zone, which it'll be interesting to see how those two realities mesh. We're going to go to the Indianapolis Children's Museum, which, believe it or not, David, is the largest in the world. The largest children's museum in the world. And then a little bit north of that, as we get close to the Illinois border, there is a theme park that is an agricultural theme park. So we'll be riding the Combine of Doom. And
my grandson would love doing that. Are your kids that way? I mean, they like the big machines, the harvester threshers, the...
They like stuff. Yeah, they like,
stuff. Well, they material like, world. They're very comfortable in it.
Right. No, they like a lot of stuff. It's kind of a new proposition. I don't know exactly what to get from it, but I'm excited about it. We're going to be seeing some of those sites and sharing those next week on the show as we come back from Indiana with our great road trip. On the show today, and oftentimes we'll ask him to. We'll ask David Hammond this a little bit later on the program. Derek Young from CBS is going to talk about his drag racing experience and his first car as well. And Tim Williams, he is a professional alligator communicator, right? And then also a gator wrestler. He's going to be talking with us from Gatorland, which is one of the sort of off the beaten path attractions that I definitely recommend. If you like anything, if you like gators.
You like fighting with large reptiles. This is the show for you.
Like dangerous, death-defying encounters with ancient beasts, then yeah, it's for you. No, it's economical. It's time considerate. It's the kind of thing that you know, you're at one with nature. Relatively safe, I would say, you know, but the proximity is something that you can't miss. So we'll talk a little bit about Gatorland. And then on the car side, the oldest continuous weekly cruise night in America is the Old Town Kissimmee cruise night. Todd Larkin is going to be filling us in on all that stuff. Not only do the cruise night that you know and love, the kind of things we do here, but also sort of a parade element built into it too, where they do this kind of procession of cars as well. And so most of the people doing the road trip are in cars, and oftentimes we've got Joey Gelman here. We are so lucky to have him in the booth. We are unlucky not to have the company of the beautiful and talented Lise Graham, because she's putting her credibility on the line here, because people said, okay, Dane went on the road, but Lise, what about you? The show is called On the Road. Why aren't you on the road? And today she is. Lise, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So, Lise, you sound like you've been kidnapped for something. You've got that sort of, I can't really talk right now. You're hiding under a couch. So where are you? You're in Michigan, right?
I don't know if we're in Michigan yet or up still in northern Wisconsin, but we're on our way to the Upper Peninsula, Crystal Falls, Michigan, which is a tiny little town kind of near Iron River, Iron Mountain area, just over the Wisconsin border. So, yeah, my family's been going up there for 20 years. We stay in this little, like, 1950s style cabin in a little resort with all of my dad's dear friends from kindergarten. They've been friends for like 50 years and everybody's families. And yeah, it's great. So lots of water skiing and fishing, which I won't be doing, but yeah, I don't know.
You're going to be at one with nature. So many positives there, obviously getting the chance to hang out with family and friends and reminisce on 20 years of doing the same thing. But for those people, there's always, you know, there's pros and cons, a lot of great stuff. What are the things that you try to avoid? You mentioned the fishing because that's not necessarily your bag, but is it, is there a lot of mosquitoes? You got to watch out for bears, badgers?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So the ladies all kind of hang out and the guys all hang out. So the ladies go on like two walks a day. Well, that's ambitious. Usually it turns out to be one walk later in the week. And once I think they saw a bear. I don't know if that was it. Yeah, they did see a bear at this place, but I was not there for that. I mean, there's definitely lots of nature, lots of deers, lots of mosquitoes, but, you know, wear our DEET and hope for the best. It's just awesome. The stars are, like, amazing, and there's, you know, sometimes you can kind of see the northern lights and reflected on the lake. It's just, it's really a beautiful, quiet, tranquil place. And we just got Wi-Fi in the cabins last year, which I don't know if I'm happy about or not.
What?
It was nice to be just, like, totally disconnected, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah, there's something to be said for that, the whole totally disconnected thing. But I'm happy to hear that from you, Lise, because you're one of those individuals, you know, and there are more and more that we talk to on a regular basis that say, when you mention a television, oh, I don't have TV, I don't own a television, I don't watch television. So you'd think you'd need to be connected in some way to, like, Hulu or Netflix or something. But
right. Totally. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm sorry to miss the show. It sounds like a good one. Unfortunately, we can't get 720 up here, which is kind of crazy.
What's with that? All right.
I know. So I'll get my live stream going on my phone.
All right. Get out there and at one with nature. Remember, safety first. Run from bears. This is like hang, bang the pot
run
and pan.
Bears.
Wear your DEET. Well, all that advice. All right. All right. Thanks, Lise.
Same.
Yep. Be
Have
safe.
Have a good show, man.
All right. You too. Bye. So when you think of some of the lost worlds of the Midwest, maybe one is up there in Michigan or in the Upper Peninsula, maybe not, who knows. And that's one of the cool things that later on in the program, Dave Hammond is going to talk with us as well, that there are places that are road trip close as far as, you know, just being able to get to and enjoy, that not only have you not heard of, but they have just kind of the accoutrements of some really rare things, right? Historical stuff that you just wouldn't even imagine.
Well, ancient civilizations that used to exist in this part of the world, like Cahokia, right outside St. Louis. They've got a pyramid there. It's a huge archaeological site. 40,000 people lived there at its peak around the year 1000. That's more than was living in London at that time. I mean, this is a big, big place. Was. Now all those people are gone. They don't even know the name of these people.
Wow.
But they left pyramids, and they left other, you know, other structures made of earth, unlike the pyramids in Yucatan or Egypt or whatever. These are made of earth, so they start slumping over time. But they're still huge. There's one that was originally as large as the Pyramid of Giza. And it had a base larger than the Pyramid of Giza. And
wow.
Now it's slumped and considerably eroded, but still very, very large.
A little hometown history, at least home country history, some cool things on the ancient side that are happening here. We always think of, well, geez, everything over here is so new. And in Europe and Africa and Asia and those other continents, you know, you see some ancient stuff, some going on here. We'll hear about it a little bit later on in the program. And we're going to congratulate. We've got a couple of them. I don't have the names in front of me, but we had our Beef for a Year winner. We're going to announce that, which is going to be awesome. And then last week's Beef Party for 10, because all you have to do in order to win today is 312-981-7200. You can call in and give it to Joey. You can text in or you can email ontheroadwithdane@gmail.com. Your first car, your favorite car, or your dream car. And then we'll randomly pick one of those out before the end of the show and announce it. And you're going to win a Beef Party for 10 from Bona Beef. So stay tuned for that. 312-981-7200 is the way to chime in and add your thoughts to the program on everything that we're going to be talking about today. Going to be a great show. So stay tuned. It's On the Road with Dane on 720 WGN.
Hey, this is Guy Goody from Diners, Drivers, and Dives, and you are on the road with Dane on WGN. Put your seatbelt on. We're on the road.
Yeah, 720 WGN on the road with Dane live here in the Allstate Showcase. studio on Michigan Avenue. And to my right, esteemed guest, glad to have him in, riding shotgun for the entire program, is the one and only David Hammond. You know him as the dining and drinking editor for New City, but done so many things with so many great media outlets and publications and content. He never stops. I mentioned it. He is a globe-trotting culinary and gastronomic bon vivant. And for a lot of the road trips that maybe the great barbecue teams and companies and pit masters from around the country, they all made a road trip to Chicago last week. This was the first time since it started that I was not here. I've been involved with it since it was an idea and promoting it and interviewing it. I did have Doug Saltis on. I've had, you know, everybody on, Myron Mixon and, you know, Jared Rubin. We had him on kind of previewing things, and even the Fox brothers from Atlanta, which were kind of new, coming up and bringing their barbecue. But I saw on some of the social media that you were there. You got to enjoy some of it. It is really, you know, I know that it's country music and it's also, you've got the craft beer and the country music, but barbecue, it's a pretty great event.
It's kind of the country Western alternative to Pitchfork, I think. they had a lot of, I mean, it was all country bands. Barbecue was outstanding. Barry Sorkin was there from Smoke, which killed it.
Right.
But they also had like Aloha Poke, the raw fish and a salad trend. Which
Hawaiian cuisine kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was actually very good. I was amazed by the selection of craft beers they had. They had a huge... I mean, sometimes when you go to festivals such as this, you're confronted with Budweiser and Budweiser alone, which, you know, it's fine.
Because they're confrontational. But we're big.
They're challenging. But yeah, they had row after row of great barbecue and craft beer and music and... things like you can buy belts with a Confederate flag on it. You can buy T-shirts with a Confederate flag on it.
Usually you have to go south of 80 for that.
Yeah, well, so. this is country. This well, country, my friend.
Well, one of the things that I love about it is that, yes, it has. So it's got some of kind of that team photo of greats here in the Chicagoland area. You mentioned, you know, Barry over there at Smoke does it great. You know, and it isn't always confined to barbecue. I know right. Art Smith last year had his fried chicken there. This year, Jared Leonard with Bud Long,
which I'm a huge fan.
That
was our first bite. Yeah, that Nashville chicken was a good way to kick things off, kind of light. Compared to all the heavy brisket we ate after that. Yeah, that was the first year I was there. And Barry said he's been going for 5 years now.
Yep.
And it does get really crowded at night, but that's cool, you know? Now, I got to say, as far as festivals go, standing in a crowd on hot asphalt is not my favorite eating situation to be in. But it was really fun. And we went like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so things were starting to cool down. It went to like 10:30, 11.
Yeah, I mean, if you are a fan of any one of those kind of three legs of what is this entire event, if you're just a lot of people come just for the music. I typically obviously cover a lot of the food stuff and have done that for a long time. So usually I'm kind of out of there by the time the big crowds are there. So I really do appreciate the lines, but I've heard that's one of the things, and they've gone to great pains, whether it's on the beer side, or to either have enough different things to do or have them spaced. There's some kind of, I don't know, metrics that they use to kind of create a situation. And we've all been to events that maybe the stuff is great, but it's just not well thought out, and things are just difficult to deal with. That there aren't tons of lines.
And there were activities, too, you know, like the beanbag game people were playing, and there are other little things to do besides eat and listen to the music. But about the music, what surprised me the most, there were bands coming up there I'd never heard before, but the crowd knew they were singing along to these tunes. It's like, how far out of it am I of this world? Far, I guess.
Pretty far. You know, for our kids, we've got little girls who now listen to B96 and they know all seven songs that get played. There's a lot of, like, if it's a hit song, they keep playing it on a pretty consistent basis. But there's a lot of songs I don't know anything about. And when it comes to genres that you're not super familiar with, like, and I'm not, and I'll admit it, I'm not the hugest country music fan. It's not that I don't like it. It's just not something I'm super familiar with. But you cannot deny these huge crowds. When they first started, it was just maybe a stone's throw from here, from WGN, just a little kind of west of here in a parking lot, maybe like right across from like 427, like the Tuscany, one of those places that Phil Stefani has. It was in that small parking lot that is there. Seems like a big parking lot. When you got there, it was kind of small. And they have grown to be now not only just a huge draw attendance-wise, so many people, but also... you've got to respect just the level of barbecue talent that they brought in there. You know, you've got Salt Lake, you've got Pat Martin, you've got Pappies, you've got Ubans from Mississippi. And what's really cool is, and these are people that I deal with and interact with on a regular basis, is to hear kind of that barbecue street cred of Chicago kind of extend nationwide, where this is a place that not only do they recognize and they're aware of, but also, you know, take time out of their really busy schedules to get to. So it's cool.
I did not see Chicago style barbecue represented there, which I define as rib tips or just ribs painted with barbecue sauce and cooked a little longer. Places like Carson's would do what I would. Now, that's not a lot of barbecue aficionados would not put Carson's at the top of their list just because it is so mainstream.
You got the scalloped potatoes. You've got the in the box. I remember back. I know that they're still there. I had a friend of mine that actually their mom for her birthday requested Carson's. They used to be in more different places, I know, but are they still doing a big business? Carson's?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
There's still a name to be reckoned with in Chicago, even if they're perhaps not, their empire does not extend quite as far as it once did.
Well, all they need is more fans like Dave Hammond. They'll be in good shape, even as we get more and more barbecue places here in Chicago. We're going to take a break before we come back and then send it the news. And when we come back from there, you think about road trips and 312-981-7200. If you want to share your stories, your experiences, some of the places you would suggest. But you think about all the things that you don't have, right? Where I remember as a kid, you just had mind-numbing boredom as you drove for a long time. You didn't have games like Punch Bug, you know, or 20 Questions, things like that. You just stare out the window and try to avoid
Barnyard Poker.
Car sickness, where now things are different on the tech side. And David, I know you can speak to this. We talked off the air. There are so many cool things that make travel not only more possible, safer, more enjoyable. We'll talk about that.
That people already have in their pocket.
That they probably already have in their pocket or could get with just a little bit of downloading an app. Jasmine Vaughn is going to join us after the break. Quick break, 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Michael Simon, and you're on the road with Dane at WGN. You need cool
air, baby, I'm not fooling. 720 WGN on the road with Dane here in the Allstate Showcase studio, along with Dave Hammond to my right, Ronnie Chanka, and Joey Gelman in the bath and as our air traffic controller. I don't know what you would be in the car sense, but you are here. And you think as people want to get out on the road, and I've done a little bit of it just in this last week or so, leases up, traveling to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan as well, been doing that for many years. And one of the things that hasn't changed, a lot of the trips that people like to take in some of those destinations, but what has changed is the technology and some of the cool ways that you can take all the things that we have at our fingertips, at our disposal, and kind of put it to work to make our road trips a little bit more, I don't know, either safe or enjoyable or smooth. On the line with us, we've got Jasmine Vaughn Hall. She is a writer. Most recently, we've all enjoyed her article in Elite Daily. Jasmine, welcome to WGN.
No, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you guys today.
So Jasmine, let's talk about it. People have been taking road trips and people have been getting out there, kind of seeing the sights, seeing the country. Sometimes it's to a national park. Sometimes it's to the Wisconsin Dells, or to Florida like we just did. But you said on the tech side, there's seven particular ones that you know of that people are using right now.
Yeah, I mean, as we all know, our phones are sort of like our babies. We take them everywhere. So there's no way they're staying home when we're going on road trips. And, you know, when you're taking your phone on your road trip, it's not necessarily to, you know, be in the car and just on your phone. These apps actually, you know, sort of help the road trip go a little bit smoother. If I had to pick probably, you know, one of the ones that people even use when they're not on their road trips, it would have to be Waze. And Waze is just sort of a community-based app where people can tell you, oh, there's an accident this far away from you, or there's a police officer posted on, you know, 2 miles away, or, you know, just stuff like that that helps you out on your road trips.
When you think about the maps, it is a crazy thing. And it's weird that you mentioned it because we had stopped somewhere, I think it was like Tennessee or something, Dave. And I know that I'm sure you have in your glove compartment, you have some maps or you have the access to maps, at least. They had them up by the front and there were these big sort of kind of road atlas, beautiful. It wasn't the fold up one. It was like a big thing. And my daughter, she's 9. She opened it up and she was just mesmerized by the artistic quality of the maps. And she looked up and said, what are these? Like, what is this? She had no idea, number one, what they were. I mean, when I said it's maps, but she couldn't understand the reason why anyone would need one of those. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. I feel like no one really has maps in the car anymore. They have maps on the phone, and Siri's telling them where to go.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you miss with using Google Maps as opposed to regular old paper maps is a sense of the huge context around places, because you just, I mean, you can zoom in, expand out, and so on, but it's nice having that whole area kind of laid out for you so you can see the relation between places. And I don't get that with Google Maps or Wave.
No, I agree. I for one, wish I grew up, reading a map, just because my navigation skills are just horrible. Now I rely so heavily on my phone to tell me where to go and how far I am from anywhere that I'm going.
Well, you can't. No, don't worry about it, Jasmine, because, I had some of those abilities, where in the past you had to know whether it was your, to grandma's house or how to get to your friend's house or how to get to things or places that you liked. In your mind, you knew how to get everywhere. Not only did you know that, you knew all the phone numbers of all the people in your life as well. And trust me, that goes away. So it's not like riding a bike if you ever remembered how to do that. Because now I think even just after, 10 years of the smartphone now, it's just so great. You can get anywhere, you can put in any destination, whether it's Jiffy Lube down the street or a restaurant you want to go to, and you don't have to worry about anything. I think you lose the ability to do all the map reading. David, do you still have it?
Yes, I think that's true, and it's another example of how technology takes the place of what used to be innate and natural skills. I'm a writer. I've been writing since 1980. I don't actually write with a pen anymore. I mean, I may write a word or two that I want to remember, but I keyboard so much that actually writing a sentence or two has become kind of tedious. I'd rather just key it in. I'm five times as fast, and it's recorded. Yeah, and also, maybe I'm not that coordinated, but I mean, it's hard. I find just the physical act of writing, like, a page, which I used to do regularly in school, many more than just a page, multiple pages, very uncomfortable, difficult, cumbersome, boring, slow.
Well,
I'm not proud of that.
Oh, you're the opposite, Jasmine? So you actually like appreciate doing the old school writing?
Yeah, I feel like it's a different thought process when you're actually, putting your mind to something and then writing it down. It's a way different thought process than when you're just typing away. Every article I write, it's on white paper first, and then I transfer it to my computer. It's just a way different thought process for me, and a lot better stuff comes out.
Well, when it comes to meetings and some other things, a lot of times I'll do I'll write down scribbly things but for some reason it kind of sticks in my memory and allows me to remember, some of the things I want to touch on or some of the things that I definitely want to mention. Okay, so we understand, Google, and we understand, the maps and the GPS, how helpful that is. What are some of the other things that you've got?
I think for as a lady, one that I really, really, really like is the Spit or Squat app. This helps you out and lets you know what public restrooms are available to you on your road trip. I mean, I'm not opposed in dire measures to, get out there in the wild, but it'd be nice to go to a nice bathroom, when you've been driving for 7 or 8 hours. And the good thing about this app as well is that it lets you know if it's how it's rated. Is it dirty? Is it, scary? Are you going to need to bring your friend with you inside? That type of stuff.
What do you got, Dave?
I just want to reflect back for a moment on the Windy City Smokeout. They had the world's best washrooms there.
Nice.
I'm not kidding. I would go there specifically for the washroom. They were air conditioned. They were huge. They had locks on the doors of the Johns. They had paper towels.
Jasmine, do you think sometimes, right, people may find their way to events that they didn't even intend to go to just for the bathrooms?
Yeah, I feel like half of my crazy stories in my 20s so far has to do with me having to go to the bathroom.
Well, I mean, and those are the conversations that you have in the, no matter how many times you tell whoever's with you or the kids, all right, who has to go to the bathroom, go now. No, I don't have to go. 5 minutes in or some distance that's too far to turn back, I have to go to the bathroom. Then you've got to figure some stuff out. And kids, they have absolutely no patience. You explain to them, like, Vivian, we are in traffic and on an expressway. There is no bathroom here. You're going to have to hold it.
You had
it.
Your chance, right?
I don't know how much you just threaten them with common sense. But here's another one that I saw on the list, too, is last-minute sleepovers. And we did stop on the way down to Florida, stopped somewhere in the Nashville area. The Nashville area was kind of booked up. It's very hot right now, and all the hotels from every, kind of range of price and amenity were pretty much booked up. So maybe 15 minutes after you have kind of these other towns, and you've got your Motel 6 and, you know, some, and then some local ones like, you know, the Scottish Inn and things like that. What you have now that I think that I appreciate it, I don't know if this is a specific app, and I know that you've got one, Jasmine, you can share, but it's just the ability to know what hotel is there, what it costs, what is available, a number that you can call, you know, and then maybe even some reviews. Sometimes the reviews are a double-edged sword. It's a little scary because it tells you too much, like the owner is a crook,
yes,
or this place is filled with bugs and maybe you don't have the ability to really make a good decision. But I remember on road trips where we would stop and, you know, when I was a kid, you didn't have access to all that. So you had to stop and your parent would have to get out at each and every place, walk in, have a 5-minute conversation with someone, and then come out kind of like a papal confirmation with either a thumbs up or like, get back in the car, we're moving on. So you get to avoid that now with the modern stuff.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like the Hotel Tonight app. You know, if you're driving on the road and you need last minute place to stay, you can use Hotel Tonight. Sometimes they're even cheaper if you just book them right there, like 15 minutes before, because they're rooms that, you know, clearly are vacated because nobody is in them.
It is good, right, where you can get, kind of be sort of a win-win for everybody, where you've got rooms that they're not able to share that are going to be wasted, and then, of course, you need a place to stay. But it is still one of those things, I think you're armed with a little bit more. If you do, you don't have necessarily something planned. You've just gotten to the point, like, I can't drive anymore. We need to stop somewhere. Dave, what you got?
Have you used Airbnb much on the road, or is that, like, not fit your needs?
I have not used Airbnb yet, but I've heard some amazing and then some not so amazing stories from other people who have used it. But I would say it's also a great asset depending on what you're doing.
We use it all the time when we travel and have only had one bad experience out of about 20.
Oh, good.
It's a wonderful way to kind of live in a local person's home, if that's what you want. I mean, some people would rather have a more impersonal hotel room, which I totally understand why some might like that. I kind of like getting to know. We stayed in a place in London, for instance. We got there a little early. I heard the shower go on as we were walking up to the door, and I thought, oh, God, is our host going to be in the shower? He was. He came down and opened the door in a towel.
it was totally
natural and fine, and then he went and got dressed. We talked a little.
I'm sure that was in the brochure, David. You just didn't mention that. Well, here's the one question I did have about that. Now, David, is that the kind of stuff that you have to plan for, or can it be 11 o'clock at night on the road and you can book?
It would be harder to do that, okay. But I got to believe there's still some latitude. If they have an open room and it's a place that, you know, is taking guests in, they'd be crazy not to say, sure, come on over.
Let the listeners know we're talking with Jasmine Vaughn Hall. She is a writer. You know and love her from some of her stuff in Elite Daily, talking about some of the tech for road trips. Jasmine, do you have one more you want to kind of hit us with before we let you go?
One more I would have to say is definitely GasBuddy, because we know how astronomical gas prices can be. And with GasBuddy, you get to sort of rank the lowest from the highest on your road trip. And clearly we're all going to go for the lowest. You know, everybody's got to pitch in, but it'll be a lot less when you're getting the lowest price.
All right,
so GasBuddy, definitely look out for that. And we had someone from the 815 wanted to know if you could repeat the bathroom app again.
Oh, the bathroom app. That one is called Sit or Squat, no space.
All right, Sit or Squat. So, Jasmine, if people want to keep up with you as you're either sitting, squatting, doing whatever it is that you're doing all over the country and for Elite Daily, what are some of the ways on social media that people can keep up with you?
Well, if you want to keep up with me on Twitter, you can reach me at jvaughn, that's V-A-U-G-H-N, 411. And then if you want to catch up with me on Instagram, it's whatsittoya92.
What's it to you, 92? All right. Thanks, Jasmine. Thanks for taking time out, helping our listeners, and have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right. 720 WGN on the road with Dane. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have my visit with the oldest, longest, continuous cruise night, weekly cruise night in the country down there at Old Town Kissimmee. So stay tuned for that. It's on the road with Dane on 720 WGN.
Find my 409.
Hey, this is Todd from Old Town Kissimmee. We are here with our Saturday Night Classic Car Show and Cruise, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
Well, I saved my pennies and I saved my dimes. Giddy up, 409.
720 WGN on the road with Dane. Actually on the road, walking the walk on the travel side here at America's longest running weekly car show. This is where it has been happening on a regular basis and more often than ever before. And here, the man with his hand on the pulse of so much of it with the marketing department here at Old Town is Todd Larkin. Todd, welcome to WGN.
Thank you very much, and welcome to Old Town.
Well, I'm excited to be here. Number one, because of the history, the legacy, all of the stuff that has happened before. And you say it's the longest running weekly car show. How long has it been going on here at Old Town?
We just celebrate our anniversary on April 8th. So it's been 27 years since we've had our Saturday Night Classic Car Cruise.
So 27 years here, same location here, because you got to think about it. For those people that enjoy some of the car shows around Chicagoland, sometimes they take over entire downtowns. Sometimes, you know, they're off in a parking lot somewhere, a designated area. But you guys have like a full-fledged entertainment kind of nirvana going on.
Yes, we actually have shopping, we have rides, we have restaurants, so we're all kind of just a nice complete package. So if people bring their cars down, they actually have a day of fun as well.
Lots to do on the car side, certainly lots to do on the rides and amusement side as well. You mentioned 20 plus years here for the car show, but the cars span an incredible range. You see some very old cars, I see maybe from like the 20s or 30s all the way up to things that are quite a bit newer. What do you have here tonight?
We have every year that you can possibly think of, every make, every model, every color. A lot of these cars actually were purchased someplace and have been restored. We have one cruiser who's been doing it all 27 years, and he has over 50 cars, including a 57 Chevy convertible that you'll probably actually see in the cruise tonight.
There's some amazing ones. There's a Cobra here. There's a Pinto here. You've got some of the classics. You know, you've got the SSs. You've got quite a few Volkswagen Beetles, which you don't see a ton of here, in an incredible shape. I mean, so it's a really nice range of cars that are here at the show as well. And I know that in Chicagoland area, people come from all over the place. They travel around and visit multiple shows. But you are here in one of kind of the tourism meccas of the country. So do you get or do you hear about people that are coming through from maybe faraway places in the country want to stop here at Old Town?
Absolutely. We actually get a lot of snowbirds that will come down during the winter months and visit us, and we'll show their car for a couple months and then head back home. We actually are getting people from UK, London, that will actually ship their car over across seas and then show it here for a couple months and then ship it back.
I think that's a testament to what you guys are doing here, that it's a desirable location. So you've got the cars, you've got people showing them off, you've got great music, a lot of the things that people enjoy about a classic car show or a cruise night. But you guys do some things that are a little bit different with the car cruise and the way you really highlight it in sort of a parade format.
Exactly. We do the car cruise at 8:30 every night, every Friday and Saturday, I should say. So it drives down what would be the main street of Old Town, which we call the Bricks. So they drive down one side, they do a roundabout on the other, and then they turn around and come on back. So that allows them to kind of get a little bit of a spotlight, but allows people to watch them as they cruise down our brick streets.
We're here on the Saturday cruise night, but of course you do stuff on Friday as well, longest running. So whenever you make it down, wherever you are hearing this, you get down to the Kissimmee area, you get down to Old Town, this is going to be happening for you. And sometimes, and you know this, you know, it's great, some bragging rights are always important, but you guys have some prizes.
Oh, absolutely. We do checker flag winners every Saturday night, and those are cash prizes with that. We also do giveaways. We do a 50-50 drawing. So we actually do a lot for our cruisers, and it's welcome to anyone, and it's free to anyone. So
a lot to do on the cruise side, a lot to do here at Old Town as well. So Todd, for those people hearing this, want to find out all the information, get some of the events. I know you got music and bands and of course all the entertainment that you'd have in sort of an amusement park setting. What's the website for Old Town where they can get it all?
Absolutely. It's myoldtownusa.com.
MyOldTownUSA.com. Make your way down here. Bring your classic car. You will find a home, as so many people have done that for 27 years. And Todd, thanks so much for what you're doing, and thanks for being on WGN today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. I just want to tell you right now that.
Hi, this is Stephanie Izard, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
I really do believe that something's got a hold on me here.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here, Allstate Showcase Studio. Joey Gelman in the booth, David Hammond to my right, riding shotgun for the program. Again, 312-981-7200. You can text in, you can call in and give it to Joey, your first car, your favorite car, or your dream car. You can even email if you want to, plus any extra information or cool pictures of your car you want to. You can do that on the road with Dane at gmail.com. So many people are taking to the road whether it's on the road to those kind of road trips or just kind of transformative travel when you get that opportunity in the summertime to get out there and people are looking for options. And sometimes some are obvious and sometimes some are really, really great, but sort of under the radar. And Dave Hammond, he is dining and drinking editor for New City, but also, an avid traveler, right? You have been doing this travel thing for your entire life. And one of the places that you had come in contact that you thought, hey, the listeners would love to hear about this it's the Azores, right?
The Azores. Yeah, my wife really wanted to go there. And honestly, when I heard that she wanted to go, I had to kind of Google the Azores to find out where it is. I'll share that with our listeners.
You're like, it's south of Berwyn.
It is definitely. It's off the coast, like 1,000 miles off the coast of Portugal, west of Portugal. So it's there are 9 islands in all. They're volcanic islands. They were formed like 1.5 million years ago.
We're not going to hold you to the exact.
Yeah, right. But there is kind of an interesting. A lot of the islands are still covered in volcanic rock. St. George, which is really the most popular island, is very green and lush because it's a mere 300,000 years older than any of the other islands. So it had chance for all this volcanic rock to be pulverized into eternity. Islands like Pico must have had to have dug through many feet of lava, hardened, of course, and then they've got all this lava. What the hell are they going to do with it? They build like these fences around all their property. So the vineyards, and there's quite a few vineyards on Pico, one of the Azores, that they're like these 10-foot square little garden areas, and in a vineyard there may be 20 of these, and these volcanic rocks absorb heat during the day, and then at night they keep the vines warm because they have all this stored up energy. Well, we went with a company called Azores Getaways, and they arranged everything for us. But there were times when we kind of got off the itinerary and just went exploring for ourselves. And these are places like I've never seen before. They're otherworldly. They're a little bit like Iceland, which is also volcanic. So there's like steam vents that are kind of blasting out of the ground.
Wow.
And in the Azores, they actually cook in these vents. So they have, and food is my thing, so I'm interested in what they're doing with that. But there's like these blasts of extremely hot heat coming out of the ground. Soon there'll be a volcano. I mean, eventually it'll blow. There'll be a volcano. But this heat is currently escaping through these air vents. And they lower like pails filled with food in there, and they cook. It's a novelty thing. This isn't the way the citizens.
This is going to be the next big craze. Hey, forget about the Filipino food. This is going to be the Azorean, volcanic funnel food. Well, Iceland is one of those, and it happens, right? As you're kind of just here, it's either that next kind of thing that gets some attention. Get some play. There's so many amazing places around the world to see off what you would say the beaten path of typical vacation destinations. Iceland is one that has been, I've known before, if it was like 5-6 years ago, I wouldn't have known anyone who had been there. And now I know a bunch of people have been there. Certainly they've got those springs, volcanic. You think of it still as kind of a, like an Arctic kind of thing, right? Are the Azores described what we would, is it Bora Bora? Is it Bali? Is it Fiji? Is it like that?
Well, it's Europe. They speak Portuguese and they consider themselves, a part of Portugal, unlike the Sicilians consider themselves or don't consider themselves part of Italy. I mean, the Sicilians think of themselves as kind of a separate.
So they're European. So I'm trying to describe Europeans in just kind of a general way. So they're wearing like Dockers and they're chain smoking, or are these like indigenous island people?
There are no indigenous island people. They don't think anybody lived on the Azores.
Are you serious?
Before the Portuguese got there. It's 1,000 miles from Portugal, and a lot of it is volcanic. It's black volcanic, kind of like parts of Hawaii.
You'd have to be really, really, really lost for a really long time. I don't know if there's an app for that, right? An ancient app that'll get you 1,000 miles from Portugal. So they found it and they decided it's interesting. So what are the reasons to go there, and what do you see?
Well, one of the reasons to go there is it's pretty much unlike anywhere else I've ever been on the planet, and with. We mentioned Iceland. Iceland's only like 3.5-4 hours from New York. Oh. Azores are only about 4 hours or so from Boston. They have direct flights from Boston to the Azores. They have direct flights from Oakland, California to the Azores. So these are a little bit longer.
I'm getting a conflicting picture because I'm seeing I'm seeing vineyards with little volcanic fences. I'm seeing volcanoes. And then I'm seeing a giant metropolitan airport.
No, the airport is, it's kind of like Midway was in the 50s. I'd say maybe a little bit smaller than that. But and that's why these companies like Azores Getaways is trying to promote tourism there, because people don't know about it.
Right.
It's an interesting place to go. They shot episodes of Doctor Who on parts of the Azores because it looks like another planet. But then there are these islands like St. George that are lush and beautiful and look like practically like a tropical island.
Is it the kind of thing that you would maybe look into doing if you were going to maybe visit Hawaii, where you typically would visit maybe one or two or three different places? So maybe you'll get your tropical lush island fix on there. You'll get some of the interest in some of the newer ones and in the other ones, and so you can kind of bulk them together. Is that what people do?
Yeah, I mean, we visited three islands, and usually people will visit more than one. I mean, unless your time's extremely limited, and then you just pick out one, frequently St. George, and stay on that. We didn't actually go to St. George. We went to Terceira, Pico, and Fayal. And that's why it's nice to have an agency pull all that stuff together for you, because there's inter-island travel that you want to you want to do road trips once you're in the Azores.
Well, you want some kind of guide to be able to say, like, here's some things, so you're not just kind of floundering out there trying to figure it out. When you mention, and that's one of the things, you go to some of these places when you're going to have the sights, the sounds of whatever the environment is. But if there were no people there, you know, so you're getting, is it Portuguese food? Granted, they're cooking it in a volcano.
No, but not often. I mean, that's more of like a novelty that they do now and again. It's a, it's very much like Portuguese food. They have some of their unique dishes like alcatra, which is a stew. And they have, here's kind of a weird thing, on Terceira, they have bullfights May through October in the streets. In the streets.
So it's like that. It's like that cul-de-sac hockey game that you did when you were a kid,
only with raging bulls. And they pick a different town every night, and it's like every night they pick a town.
Is it like a car? Is there like Crazy Larry's? You know, on the road bullfighting. You know, like they pull up and they set up in the Kmart parking lot, but it's the same guys.
So sleazy, but it's guys. They have guys in white shirts and like Zorro hats, who have a rope attached to the bull's neck, so in case he goes completely wild, they can kind of restrain him.
Nice.
But the people in these villages, mostly men, run out into the street with umbrellas frequently, because that's what they use to attract the bull's attention. Bull charges after him, just like in Pamplona. They go diving over fences to get away from the bull.
Wait a minute. Okay, so you're doing it in the street, and the local residents are the kind of de facto bullfighters?
They call it bullfighting, but it's more like running with the bulls. There's not a matador or anybody with a cape and a sword and stuff like that. And the bull doesn't die.
Nice.
It is kind of nice. I mean,
because you wouldn't want to have the tilt-a-whirl going and then smash it every night, right? You want to move it to the next town.
And see this dead animal being carted off.
That's not good for
the eyes of the kid.
That isn't good for business.
Right. So, but that's kind of an unusual, and there are many. Those unique little Azorean customs that have grown up independently of Portugal. So it's a unique culture connected to the mainland culture, but different in a lot of ways. And the bullfighting in the streets is one of those things that make Terceira, at least, unique.
So they enjoy it. Is it something that is it something that a tourist would want to see? Or is there a way that they can kind of experience it at a safe distance? Or is there a waiver form to sign?
Knew somebody at a bar or something who let us stand up on a roof and watch the bulls go charging by chasing people.
Okay.
And it is, people have a problem with bullfighting, and the bulls are definitely being teased and tormented. They're not being killed. And they're
their feelings are being hurt.
No, I think they're actually...
they're performers, you think, right?
Yes, and I think they may actually like striking back at the humans who are tormenting them.
That are tormenting them.
Tormenting them. And yeah, people have kind of a problem with that, and I respect it. But I think that if you eat meat in this country, which is a very hard, it's hard to just, I love beef. It's hard to justify being a carnivore, that is raising an animal and then killing it and raising it in sometimes inhumane circumstances. I think if you're okay with eating beef, how could you not be okay with bullfights?
Yeah, or even just bull kind of interaction, like this cold,
bull interaction.
like the cul-de-sac bullfight. That's a I don't know. I think that's crazy. That's interesting. The Azores, we're going to talk about it. Now, do you have anything online that you could point people to related to the Azores? Did you do anything where they or a site where they can get some more information?
Well, Azores Getaways is a is a great site to go to. I mean, they'll lay out all the options of where you can visit.
Okay. All right. So that's one thing. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dave Hammond is with us. We've got two separate things we definitely want to talk with him about before the end of the show. One is This is a destination that everybody knows of, has heard of. Probably a good percentage of us as listeners have been to. But here are some different ways to experience Mexico. We're going to talk about that before the end of the program. And then you think of the lost cities of the Midwest, right? Things that are happening within that whole road trip, day trip kind of range that are a world away, a civilization away, and historically important. We'll talk about that as well. So we're going to take a quick break. It's here. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me
that which I desire. Hey, this is Kevin Harvick, driver of the number 4 Jimmy John's Ford Fusion, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN. On the Road with Dane here, Allstate Showcase Studio, live on Michigan Avenue. And a lot of the drivers, most of them, almost all of them from the Monster Energy Cup Series for NASCAR are going to be down a road trip away at Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the Brickyard 400. It is something that I have covered many, many times and attended many, many times, and encourage everybody to get down there. Take your road trip to Indiana, get down there, and you can get some tickets. I think kids under, I don't know if it's under 16. I wish I had more information about it. I know they're, it's very price considered, and I think for $40 you can get in there and check out that race. I might have a couple tickets. I'll know before the end of the show today. But again, you have to be able to get there and go. It's only 2.5 hours away to Indianapolis if you leave early. So, but it's not, you know, Schaumburg. So you've got to be able to attend. What also isn't Schaumburg is Mexico. Dave Hammond is in studio with us. He is the dining and drinking editor for New City and a guy who travels a lot and has some great experiences and I think a really cool perspective, not only on food, but also fun and some of those things. And Mexico is a place that I did my honeymoon in Mexico. I have been to Mexico a number of times on vacation to places that are, you know, on the normal tourist track, let's say Cancun or Riviera Maya or someplace like that. Now you had the opportunity, and Lou Bank, if you don't know him, people, he is kind of the maestro of mezcal. He is one of those great ambassadors for this spirit, and he walks the walk. I mean, this is a guy that isn't just knowledgeable and in tune. He is on a regular basis out there, not only promoting, but doing it, getting there, showing up. And you, David, got a chance to go with him. And Mexico is one of those places that when you think about getting off of that tourist track, it can be thought of as genuinely dangerous, right?
Yes. Oaxaca happens to be one of those areas that is not so dangerous. And Yucatan as well, where we were last month. Oaxaca and Yucatan are both kind of not on the narco trafficking flight path.
Which so you won't run into your dangerous types.
Homicidal drug dealer, right? Not much. Although Cancun is getting kind of dangerous. I just read about a shooting this morning. I think it's unfortunate that a lot of people's only introduction to the Yucatan, which is on the peninsula that comes up south in southern Mexico, a lot of people, when they go to the Yucatan, just go to Cozumel or Cancun, which are great places, although Cancun's getting a little dangerous. The interior of the peninsula, though, is where all the archaeological zones are, or the major ones. Tulum is nice. It's near Cancun. That's cool. I'm glad people get a chance to visit it. But there are estimated to be 70 indigenous metropolitan centers in Yucatan, many of them covered over by jungle. Some excavated. You probably heard of the big ones like Chichen Itza, Ishmael, so on. But we went to some that were virtually unknown and on this last trip, and some that are just being uncovered. We were going through this little town, and there's a pyramid in this little town right next to a convenience store and a bank. There were kids playing on top of it. And
how big a pyramid was this?
It was, I don't know. I guess it was maybe 6.5 stories.
Wow. Like okay. So sizable.
Amazing.
Not the thing you just, as you're building the convenience store, what's that?
Well, it was probably a hillock. It probably looked like a little mountain in the city. And they may have known that, oh yeah, there's something buried under that. But due to a lot of things like lack of archaeological interest and also kind of a lack of local interest, I'm not sure the locals really understood what an incredible tourist destination.
Especially now with, I just think the world has become a much smaller place with social media and the internet. You have the ability to advertise on an individual and super cost effective, almost free way. You know, if you can get some people like yourself as ambassadors to say, hey, this is something to check out, it could be a goldmine for the city.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And in Oaxaca, the allure was different. We were going there for mezcal, and you can still get some of the best mezcal in the world In fact, I would say you can definitely get the best mezcal in the world in Oaxaca. It's produced in like 9 different states of Mexico. By law, you can only call it mezcal if you're licensed and certified by the government. The sanctioning body estimates that 80% of the mezcal that's produced in Oaxaca is not certified. So there's a lot of people making uncertified mezcal, as they have for a very, very long time, in some cases centuries, for a very hyper-local population. The guys we visited, like I brought some mezcal today from Victor Ramos, he produces, I mean, he's doing this all by hand. He's planting the agave, he's harvesting the agave, he's grinding it, you know, with the help of a few workmen, fermenting it, and then distilling it pretty much all by himself. And he's not putting it into bottles. We showed up there, we bought a case of water, you know, drinking water, distilled water. We drank it. We threw some out. We basically needed the bottles because when we went to these little places, these guys don't have bottles. They don't need stinking bottles. They want, you know, you bring your bucket, your canteen, whatever. You fill it up there. And then you take it to the quinceañera or the religious festival or whatever. It's all for a local group. And the prices are, we paid between $5 and maybe $30 per liter. For some incredible stuff.
For the listeners, just as kind of a little bit of background, is that, you know, mezcal is kind of the ancient and traditional. It's in the team photo of tequila, right? Yes. It's along in that kind of same.
A distilled agave spirit. It's made from the agave, which looks a little like a cactus. It's kind of a spiny plant, and they cook the kind of the heart of the plant, crush it, add water, ferment, distill. That's how you make tequila. Or mezcal.
In so much in the traditional way as well. It reminds me a little bit, and you could tell me if this has any kind of correlation, is, you know, in the jungles in South America where they had the acai berry, which was something that the locals ate, and it had health properties and antioxidants. And then, you know, we kind of got a hold of the idea and then went down there and just kind of shook everything up. Whereas you've got with mezcal, they've been making it for generations for personal consumption of the village. And now the world wants some. How are they dealing with that?
Well, these little mezcal makers, this 80% of the mezcal makers in Oaxaca who are not certified, they're never going to be selling stuff in Chicago because they'd have to be certified. And that means they have to pay the equivalent to like a year's wages just to be sanctioned by the government. It's a heavily politicized, and I'm going to guess corrupt, operation. I mean, it's weird because there's like little pockets in Guerrero and so on that are sanctioned to make mezcal, places where they didn't even traditionally make mezcal. But due to some kind of lobbying, shenanigans, payoffs, and so on, the government has said, okay, you can bottle what we're going to allow you to call mezcal rather than just distilled agave spirits.
Dave Hammond is with us. He is the editor, the dining and drinking editor over there at New City, and he was a mezcal mule. We'll find out where we can read one of those great pieces as well. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, before we send it to news, we will do all of that. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN. WGN On the Road with Dane here live. Allstate Showcase Studio. To my right, riding shotgun for the entire duration of the program, David Hammond. He is here. Joy Gelman is in the booth manning all of the button switches, pulleys, levers, all the blinking things. He's doing that. Now, Dave, before we went to news, we talked a little bit about, you know, mezcal. I think some of the things that are going on, the excitement that it is generating in the spirits community, has become really hot and popular. There is no substitute really for being there and getting to see it because it is such a cool traditional process.
And there are some types of mezcal brands, let's call them that you can't get in the United States. They're not making it here now.
Is it like Pablo's brand? I mean, because the way it's been described to me by you and by others is that's. It's a guy with a leather bag and a mule and a big rock, and that's about it, right? And so if you're into, like, his brand or is that it?
These things are not, as I was saying, they don't have their own bottles even, so they don't have brands and logos. These are guys whose father, grandfather, great-grandfather, they made mezcal for their village, for the religious celebrations, for quinceañeras and so on, and they're still doing it. Now, if people in Chicago want to try some of these obscure mezcals, some of which are perhaps uncertified and not available in the U.S. Lou Bank has his organization called SACRED, which stands for Saving Agave for Culture, Recreation, and Education. He runs a tour called the Agave Triangle. Just Google Agave Triangle, and you pay like $25 or something like that, and then you go to three different bar restaurants in the Logan Square area, and you get a little the bartender will tell you a little about the agave.
Nice.
And you can try this agave, and you kind of do it at your own speed. If you want, you know, if you want to try some other stuff, I'm sure you can. But it's a way to try some very good mezcals curated by Lou Bank and get a little bit of education about this beverage that's becoming kind of the hot thing.
It is. It's undeniable. It is becoming definitely the hot thing. So that's some great ways to experience it. We'll talk about some ways to experience some of that travel. I got a chance to travel doing the road trip style down to Florida, and in the Orlando Kissimmee area, there is a place called Gatorland. It is different than some of the traditional theme parks in the way that is, you know, it's got free parking for sure. That's great. But also you get to be up close and personal with a lot of the animals, the gators. They got a bunch of different animals there, more than just gators. But when people think of things to go or places to go, things to see and do in the area, it isn't necessarily one that comes to mind. We all think of all of the iconic theme parks, you know, your Disney's and your Universals and SeaWorld. And those are great. I'm not saying people shouldn't attend those. We got a chance to talk with Tim Williams. He is a gator wrestler and a communication superstar for the world of Gatorland. He walks that walk, been doing it for 27 years. So, Tim, what is it about Gatorland that makes it so special and unique compared to the other parks?
This is just the premier park, the oldest theme park in Central Florida. We started in 1949, which I tell everybody is 25 BD. That's 25 years before Disney. And the original park was 16 acres. We're now 110. We're getting ready to open up our swamp buggy rides. We've got three great shows, Gator Wrestling, Gator Jumparoo, the Up Close Encounter Show. This year we have about 2,000 alligators, a couple of hundred crocodiles, and a plethora, which is a word I cannot spell, of other animals, birds and snakes and turtles, and it just goes on and on and on.
I was surprised to hear that there are more things than gators. But you got to think about this. You know, there are, I don't know if there are many animals out there in the animal kingdom that have intrigued so many or provided so much fascination for people young and old alike. People love the gators. In your opinion, as a guy who's been here for a long time and seen this, and certainly we'll talk about a lot of the other things going on, but what is it about the gator that makes it so interesting that 400,000 people show up here every year?
Well, I think it's the fact that their numbers in the wild have made such a great comeback. We now find them from coastal North Carolina, south through Florida, west along the Gulf States into Texas. So anytime you're in those areas, there's a good chance you're going to bump into a gator. Hopefully it's going to be at a place like Gatorland, but there's a good chance you'll bump into a wild gator. And one of the things we strive very hard to do is to help educate people about what these animals are about. I think, you know, our ignorance makes us afraid of things. Doesn't mean we'll fall in love with them as we learn more, but at least we can respect them and know how to live with them, because we're building our homes and our businesses in their backyards, and they've been here 20 million years. They're not going anywhere. When everything's wiped out of Florida, if that ever happens, I assure you there will be mosquitoes, cockroaches, and alligators still walking around.
You mentioned bumped into, and that is one of the things I think that has made them so relevant in people's lives, is that you always hear those stories of people encountering them in their backyard, in their pool, on their porch, in the road, at the golf course. So the gators, even though they are, you know, a mysterious and ancient animal and certainly dangerous, I think people can respect that, it is something we come in contact with.
It is, and they have this aura about them that people think they're out there waiting on us to show up so they
can. Aren't they?
Well, I certainly hope not. You know, I tell everybody the most dangerous thing we do at Gatorland every day is drive to and from work. That's far more dangerous than working with these animals, and it's dangerous working with them, but we kind of have an idea of what we're doing. Yeah. We hope we do. But the fact that they have attacked people, usually average somewhere between 12 and 20 attacks a year, which is not many when you consider how many gators are out there. And fatalities are very rare, very, very rare, even though it's no fun getting chewed on by an alligator or a shark or God knows what. But I think if we learn that if you're going into places that's alligator habitat, if we learn what to look for and how to conduct ourselves, we can decrease the chances of us having an encounter with one of these marvelous animals.
Well, you mentioned the word learn, and education is such a big part of what happens here. What I love about it, and one of the things and the reasons I thought it was important to highlight what's going on here at Gatorland, is that you have I think, a very unique and, of course, safety-minded, educational focus, proximity to them. You really get to get up close and personal.
You do. It's one of the few parks where we encourage people to take part in our shows. The Gator Wrestling Show is where we catch a gator between 6 and 8 feet long. It's not taped up, and our handlers get there to use the animal as a demonstration on how an alligator is made, what it can and can't do. Shows are fun, funny, but also very serious and very educational. And afterwards, people get an opportunity to come down and sit on that gator. We tape it up. We make it safe. But I can tell you all day long what an alligator feels like, but until you touch and hold an alligator, you don't know what it feels like and how it's made. And I think everybody walks out of here with a much higher respect for this animal than they had when they came in here.
Like a healthy respect and a personal appreciation for it. So Gatorland, let's talk about some of the different ways that people can see and interact with the gators. One of the things I love that we just don't have at the zoo, we got some great zoos up in Chicago, but you've got maybe one or two alligators, they just sit here. Here you see so many of them interacting in so many different ways and from pretty much every age group.
You do, and we have to segregate our animals by size, not so much age, but you put a 3-foot gator in with a 10-foot gator, he's probably going to try to eat him up because that's what they do. But we keep them segregated by size. Springtime, we see the gators bellowing and they're courting. They get very lovable. It's something to watch. And then they go on the nest. They're on nest now in the wild as well as at Gatorland. Lay their eggs. We collect the eggs. In the wild, they have to incubate on their own. A lot of animals predate the nest, which gives food for wild animals. Little babies are 6 to 8 inches long. Animals eat them. And if they grow up out of a nest of 25, if three of them can get to 3 to 4 feet, they've got a good chance of getting up to maturity. But to me, one of the interesting things is that little 6-inch baby alligator can grow up to be, if it's a male, say 14 feet and weigh 800 pounds. That's pretty doggone incredible.
So you get to see them here, you get to interact with them here, and it's got, you know, a lot of the elements of what you would expect at a zoo, but a zoo with a specific niche focus. But you build in some entertainment, too. I mean, you can go zip lining. You could do some fun kind of, theme park-style stuff here at Gatorland as well.
You can. We have a zip line course that has 5 towers and a bridge, and you go over alligators and crocodiles. And then we have the only, as far as we know in this country, possibly the world, what we call our gator gauntlet. It's for challenge folks. You can be a quadriplegic in a wheelchair. We have special harnesses and hoists. We can pick you up, put you on that zip line, and send you across our gator breeding marsh. And it's a single zip. But the opportunity for folks that would have to sit on the sidelines and watch their family can now participate with them. And it's been very, very popular.
It sounds cool, and is it a beautiful place, too, a peaceful place to get out there, walk around, kind of be at one with nature in this unique setting. And it is called Gatorland. They are the stars of the show. But let's talk about some of the other animals. I know that the kids just saw some Galapagos tortoises. You've got, it looks like, some cats here. What else can people see?
We've got Florida panther. We've got bobcat. We have an aviary where you can go in and feed the parakeets and the little birds. They get all over you. It's very colorful and very noisy, but a lot of fun. And then we have snakes and bugs, tarantulas and scorpions and all manner of stuff that we use in our up-close show. The interesting thing with that, though, is a lot of people don't like snakes. They certainly don't like tarantulas and stuff. But these animals have been handled. They're very friendly. They're very easy to handle. And to see someone hold a tarantula for the first time when they're really phobic, and they go, wow, that isn't bad. And it tried to help people get past some of the fears. Again, ignorance will generate fear, and if we can just alleviate, that doesn't mean somebody's going to go out here and start catching tarantulas. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to help folks get past that barrier that made them go, oh, I can't stand spiders. Spiders are good. They're really neat animals, and they're good to have around.
You know, as far as this attraction, this location, 400,000 people, and you think about it, so many species and exciting things that are kind of indigenous to the Florida area. But the attendees are not always. I mean, you get people from around the world.
We get them from all over the world. Probably about 60% of our guests are from what we call domestic, the United States. The rest of them come from all over the world. And about 60% of that comes from the U.K., The U.K. folks love us. They like nature, and that makes us feel good because they want to come see us. And they're very critical, and we must be doing something right.
in the spirit of education, what kind of questions did they ask? Because you think about it, people that live around here and even in America, but certainly Florida, you're sort of familiar, you know, with the alligator, maybe run into them. But in a place like England, I mean, this is as far away as possible. What kind of questions you get?
Well, how do you tell the difference between alligator and crocodile, which gators are darker, have a round nose, crocodile more of a triangular nose? We all get asked, have you ever been bit? We tell them, yeah, we make mistakes. We don't brag about those. We do make mistakes. And then what do you do if a gator starts coming after you? And we tell everybody, trip whoever you're with and then walk off. It's hot. You'll get sick running in the sea.
That's sage advice. You don't have to be the fastest. You just can't be the slowest.
That's right.
But this is important education, though, too. I've always heard kind of zigzag. Is that true, or is that just something people say?
No, the zigzag theory came up a few years ago by somebody that's never been chased by an alligator. If you think about it, that theory says that alligators can only run straight, so if you run zigzag, they can't get you. Well, if they're running straight and you're running zigzag, you're going to bump into each other anyway. We tell people stay away from them. Respect them for who they are and what they are. They can't run a long ways. They can run a short ways very fast, easily outswim a person. Don't swim at night. Don't feed them. And if you think you have a problem with an alligator, call FWC, the Florida Wildlife Commission. They'll take care of it. We can't do it. We don't have the permits for it. They do.
Sage advice. Letting the listeners know we're talking with Tim Williams here at Gatorland, and you hit on it too. The internet is great, and you can get a lot of information from television and from books, but there is no substitute for actually being here. And just as people know about so many of the big iconic theme parks that people come to in the Orlando area, Gatorland is one of those places you definitely need to get to as well. Spend an afternoon, spend a day here as well at Gatorland, and be one of those 400,000 people. The 400,000 cannot be wrong. So Tim, before we let you go, let us know. I know the parking is free, which is great. Let us know a little bit about the days that you guys are open and the website where people can get more information.
We're open every day of the year. Christmas is a big time. It's big time, believe it or not. People are here, and they want to go do something. They've already spent a pile of money on Christmas. Hey, we'll go see Gatorland. Check the web, gatorland.com, for specials. And you have to do reservations for the zip line. You can go on there and do your reservations. I think the interesting thing for me, I've been at Gatorland 27 years. I've been handling alligators for 44 years. And for me, this is the best place I've ever worked. It's wonderful. We couldn't do what we do if it were not for the big parks. But a family of four can get in here for less than one admission to the big parks. Again, our parking is free. And I understand there's a big selling point that we sometimes forget. There's no waiting at the ladies' room. I'm not sure what that's all about. But evidently the ladies say, oh, wow, I like that. So
put that in the brochure.
Yeah. Yeah, and springtime is great. March, April, May is a great time to get here because our breeding marsh have 130 gators in a very natural area. Attracts all the native wading birds, and we have photographers from around the world come in here to see that. Swamp buggy is going to open up this fall. We have three swamp buggies that are going to ride through the back part of the property. So there's just a lot to see and do, and it's a great family park.
So much to see, learn, and appreciate and feel up close and personal right here at Gatorland. So Tim, thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for taking time out, and thanks for being on WGN today.
Thank you. And WGN, I was telling you, I've been watching WGN TV for years. I listen to radio a lot. I travel a lot. So I'm going to find out where WGN is out there when I'm traveling through those areas. And the next time I get up to Chicago, I may give you a call and run by and see you.
38 states and Canada. Make sure, Tim, if you do stop by, bring a gator, and we'll bring it to the studio, and we'll educate, amaze, and maybe scare some of our other hosts.
Sounds good to me.
For this week, people have been sending in their first car, favorite car, or dream car, and we're picking out the winner. The winner for this week's Beef Party 410 is from the 708, the 1952 Nash Ambassador. So we're going to be calling you a little bit after the show, and you are the winner of a Beef Party for 10. But the guy who ended up winning the love of his life, hopefully and potentially for the rest of his life, was part of our big Bone of Beef Cubs game that we had a couple weeks ago. Zach Smith is on the line. Zach, welcome to WGN.
Hey, what's going on? How are you?
Wow. So this was a big, you know, and it's not a giant club of people who have proposed at Wrigley Field. I, and along with you, Zach, are in that club. But the let's talk a little bit about it. Like, just explain, number one, congratulations to you and Brianna. Did you plan on doing it? Did you know this was going to happen?
Well, actually, I found out about the contest, and I found out I won tickets, and I was super stoked about that. And then I found out that there was a possibility I would be thrown out the first pitch. And then when I found out that it was the Friday, the day before the game, One of my coworkers actually suggested that I propose because I was planning on doing it, you know, in the next couple months. And I saw it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So after I got off work, I went out and I rushed out to get a ring, all with keeping it a secret from her. And then I asked her father the day or the morning of the game.
Wow.
And yeah, it was crazy.
So wait a minute. Okay, so this, we knew that you had to have kind of known a little bit in advance because there's some prep there, but this was something that you pulled together. And I think the impetus, the inspiration to kind of pull this all together was the Bona Beef game. Is that, I know it's the official beef of baseball as far as for both Wrigley Field and for the White Sox, but this was, is Bona Beef the official beef of love, Zach?
Yes, that was it. They gave me the opportunity and I just jumped on it.
And then before we let you go, Zach, do you guys love beef or do you have beef? And how do you take your beef? They were supposed to ask that as well. Do you like it dipped? Do you like it with the jardiniere, hot and sweet and spicy? What do you do?
I like it dipped with hot jardiniere, and Brianna likes it just dipped with no peppers.
Oh, that's so awesome. And I guess you guys made the news as well. It's some very cool stuff. So congratulations to you guys. And I know that it's always good to get off to a good start in any kind of relationship. And you guys have gotten off to the best one. So congrats. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Zach. Wow. That's you got to be a brave guy, but I did not know that he pulled it together. He knew he was going to be going to the game. Well, that's good. You know, Cubs game is a lot of fun, and he knew he was going to get the tickets for the Bona Beef. And then he found out he was going to be doing the first pitch, and he said, "You know what? I need to capitalize on this opportunity." When it comes to an opportunity, we've got a couple minutes left, Dave. When you think about road trips and opportunities to see lost cities. I know we're going to have to probably do a separate interview on this to fully expand it, but there are some lost cities right here in the Midwest.
And when we talk about lost cities, we're talking about former places where lots of indigenous people once lived in the Midwest, like mentioned Cahokia, right outside St. Louis. There's Aztlan, which is about 50 miles west of Milwaukee. They've reconstructed a stockade surrounding a huge area. They found these little like decaying fence posts and figured out where the stockade would go. So they've rebuilt that. There's an existing pyramid there, and it costs like $5 to get in. And then there's Henschel's Indian Museum and Trout Farm.
Henschel is, of course, there's Sitting Bull. There was like Geronimo, and then there was Henschel.
This is like an amateur archaeologist guy. They actually named a projectile point after him. It's called Henschel's Point. It's like a type of arrowhead that he found on his farm, and now it's cataloged under his name. He's a guy who's just totally enthusiastic about indigenous people. And he has, like, people will come in, native folks will come in and say, you know, you can't really put that in a display case. That is a sacred item. He takes the stuff out. He just says, okay, I'll take your word for it.
Well, you know what? You want to go, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. And when here in the area and you've got a lost city, you want to kind of go with the program here. I know, and before we come back to wrap it all up, we've got to take a quick break, is that let the listeners know you're going to be writing a story for the Tribune
on this. Yeah, it'll actually be appearing online this coming week and then in print a week from tomorrow, Sunday. It's called Exploring Lost Cities of the Midwest. Be lots of pictures, explanations of when you can go, how you can get there, how much it costs to get into these sites, and it's all very minimal. I mean, it's a great kind of road trip and a way to educate kids about the people who were living here before we got here, long before we got here.
Very cool stuff. Quick break. We'll be back to wrap it up on the road with Dane, 720 WGN.